You might not realize this, but this is a magic podcast. Not about outdoor, water features and sconces.
Water feature, yes.
That'd be kind of a fun podcast to do, though.
Water
like a
feature?
Podcast with my mom about a pond. Yeah.
I want to make a pond, but the whole no outside outlets is a problem.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you've never listened to us before, welcome. I swear that we will talk about magic eventually.
He's lying. I'm going to sidetrack him for at least an hour.
If you're a long-time listener, four ancient episodes ago, welcome back. Got some stuff we're going to go over tonight, but we don't have an outline until we get later into it, so we're just going to wing it by the seat of our balls and see what happens. So, tomorrow, at the time we're recording this, is Grand Prix Washington, D.C., and Kira...
No, it isn't.
It's called Grand Prix Washington, D.C.
Right, but I mean, it's not till Saturday.
Well, technically it starts tomorrow, but you're right. The GP proper doesn't start until Saturday. We're recording this on a Thursday night. Kira
being
has
a jerk again.
Pussed out and decided
to come with me and my friend
Dustin to the Grand Prix.
I explained my reasons, and you even said one of them was reasonable. All right. I only have 1.5 vacation days until August, and I'm not willing to use them. Okay? Sorry. If you want to pay me to go to Washington, D.C. with you, which isn't actually Washington, D.C., fine. But until then...
Double Denny's, man. Double Denny's.
Well, I'm very upset about it. Don't go to Denny's without me.
I'm afraid I can't.
Oh my god, you would go to Denny's without me?
I haven't been to Denny's in a year either. I haven't had a God sandwich in at least
They don't have them anymore.
What?
Yeah. We went there with Kim and Dustin last year.
New plan, firebombing Denny's.
Yes.
But anyway,
they changed a lot. It's not nearly as good anymore.
By the time y'all actually hear this, DC will probably be passed unless I actually go home and upload this tonight. But I'm going to have the wherewithal to actually get that done. So, if you're not listening to this till after the Grand Prix comes out, I hope that maybe I saw you at the Grand Prix. I'll be the big fat guy with the goatee, which really narrows it down at a 1,300 person North American Grand Prix. I don't really know how else to point myself out, though.
He's really tall.
So just start asking every 6'4" fat guy with a goatee that you see if you're the guy from that terrible podcast, and eventually maybe you'll hit one of us.
Also, Dustin will be with you.
I'll be there with another guy. Ah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
If you hear a guy who's so loud that you can make him out clearly over top of the din of 1,300 other Magic players... that was probably the guy that I'm going down there with, so find him and you can find me. But of course, you're probably not going to be listening to this until after it's too late anyway. So I don't know. I'm just going to edit all this shit out.
Don't edit this out. This is great.
But anyway, I'm glad you're joining us. We're going to talk about some stuff, probably. And, magic-related stuff. So, first thing on the magic-related stuff, we have a guest host here, by the way, too.
It's that same guy from the other episode who wandered in and then left again.
Smoker. You can say hi.
You have to talk louder than that because you're far away from the microphone.
No, they'll probably pick it up.
Sup, and also hi.
But don't yell because we're outside.
Sup, and also hi.
So, I guess since I don't have anything better to talk about because I don't have my outline on me, we'll go right into Kira's homework assignment from last week. Which, if you'll remember, was to look at the ROE spoiler and try to come up with cards that she thinks might slot well into her Gruul deck that she has been playing. So I think we got a list here.
They're on my blog. I posted them a while ago when Steve and I were supposed to record, like a week ago, but he kept getting sick or sleeping.
And then you kept being not on the internet.
I have things to do.
Anyway. So why don't you go down the list one by one, and we'll talk about, as you bring them up, whether they would be super cool or not. Real quick, just to go over the deck again, it's a red-green aggro, Gruul aggro, with an elf sub-theme, Blood Raid and Elvish Archdruid and Nissa's Chosen, and Nissa Rivain herself. And are you playing Elvish Visionaries? I don't think you're playing Elvish Visionaries. I don't remember, but, and Wolfbriar Elementals, and, just Leatherback Bailouts, that kind of stuff.
They're so cute.
They are. I didn't get any of the promo ones, which is kind of a bummer. remember Tau. Remember, it was like the first card that we actually got from Worldwake, because that guy like got that promo one like months and months ahead of time. Some guy just said that the dude at his store got it for him. Hold on, I'm looking up the doodad right now. Leatherback Baloth. So that's the normal one. Here's the gateway.
Kind of looks like a buffalo.
It does. Baloths are actually kind of buffalo-like. They're just, like, scalier. I guess usually. Well, this one, I guess, would be life every year.
Yeah.
But anyway, so...
Yeah.
That's the kind of deck we're looking at. And here's the stuff that she saw in the ROE spoiler that she thought, like, would be pretty cool.
Oh, do I have to read them all?
Yeah.
One by one, and then we'll talk about it, and then we'll read another one. Okay, I don't know how to pronounce that last word.
Kozilek.
Artisan of Kozilek.
Okay, Artisan of Kozilek is the uncommon 11-drop Eldrazi from ROE. It's the one that when you... He's a 10-9 Annihilator, too. And when you cast him, you reanimate a guy from your graveyard.
He's not actually looking at the website or anything. He's just reciting this while he's squinting his eyes up from memory. It's kind of frightening, honestly.
Yeah, I have a lot of memory that gets used for things that aren't actual things that normal people would remember. Instead, I just remember Oracle wordings on cards that people don't even play. Like, Artisan of Kozilek, I mean, to be fair, he's really good and limited. I love this guy to death in Sealed or Draft, but the problem with him in Constructed is that 11 mana is a shitload of mana. Like, super ultra shitload of mana. The other problem that I would say with him in your deck specifically, except that you would hope that your opponent is dead way, way, way before you even get close to 11 mana to cast.
Right.
I mean, like, even with a Garrick ramp, you're still looking at 9 lands in play, or... I mean, I guess with an Archdruid and a couple Elves in play, you can get there a lot quicker, but here's the other problem. When you play reanimation spells like that, you generally want to have guys that you can get into your graveyard relatively easily that are going to be worth going through all the trouble of reanimating them. So, like, you want a big, massive bastard that's just going to, like, take over the game. Or, you know, like, you play him the first time, and, like, your opponent goes through all this stuff to kill him, and he's like, whoo, got away with it, and then, like, bam, you bring him back again. Right, exactly. And your deck doesn't really have a whole lot of them. Your deck is more about efficient guys or lots and lots of guys. So, like, even if you played an Artisan to get back, like, the best guy in your deck is probably, like, a Wolfbriar Elemental. Even if you bring back Elemental, you're not casting it, so you can't pay the kicker cost, so you're not going to get any wolves off of him.
That sucks.
So it's really not worth it. So I'm going to say that...
Noisy,
it really is. Again, we're outside.
Yeah.
I also turned on noise compression, so hopefully we have less stupid sound artifacting than we had last time we did this with a standing mic in the same room. But yeah, we'll see. So I'm going to say it's not real. That one's not really a good fit for your deck.
I should have just picked completely terrible things just because I like to hear you tell me why I'm wrong. But anyway, next is Awakening Stone, which Steve tells me isn't even a real card, so I must have made it up.
That is not a real card. I'm guessing that she meant Awakening Zone.
Nope.
Which is 2 and a green for an enchantment. During your upkeep, you put a 0/1 Eldrazi spawn into play. Awakening Zone is actually a super neat card.
Put it on for me.
I don't know that it would be in this. So it's really good for ramping, obviously, because it's basically like a free mana every single turn, and you can even store them up.
So that's good.
Which is neat. The problem is your curve is pretty low. The things that you want to dump your huge amounts of mana into are things like your Wolfbriar Elemental. You want to kick a whole bunch of times to get a shitload of wolves.
Yeah.
The problem is the spawn can only be sacrificed for colorless mana, and the kicker on the Wolfbriar takes green. So you could potentially use two of them to pay for the two generic and the Wolfbriar's cost, but you could. But after that, they wouldn't be of any help to get you further wolves. And since you're not playing enormous guys like Artisan of Kozilek, like, all that other ramp is not really going to go anywhere. On the other hand, the fact remains that it gives you a free dude every single turn, which can be used for chump blocking. And it also means, even though they're 0/1 to begin with, if you pop Garrick's Ultimate or play an Overrun, they're all going to be 3/4 Tramplers. And even, like, 3 or 4 extra 3/4 Tramplers can easily win you the game, like, practically no matter how many blockers they have. So even though you're not using it to its full potential, I wouldn't dismiss it immediately.
How
shut down their best guy without trample, because every single turn they can just attack you with luck. Another neat thing is, since you can sacrifice the tokens, you can pull cool tricks with lifelink. So, say your opponent attacks you with, like, a Rock's War Monk. A Rock's War Monk is a 3-4 with lifelink. Now we've gone over what lifelink is, right? Like, whenever that creature does damage, you gain that much life. So that can be really backbreaking for an aggro deck, because you're just trying to race your opponent from 20 to 0 as fast as you can, even if they gain only, like, 5 or 6 life. Like, you can just buy them enough time that they start to overrun you with superior card quality. But so, if I attack you with, like, my 3-4 lifelinker, normally if you would block with a guy, I would get the 3 life no matter what. But you can pull a trick where you can block with a guy that you can sacrifice, and then my guy is blocked. And then before damage, you can sacrifice it to make its mana ability. And then when the combat damage step comes, my War Monk is going to try to punch your spawn in the face, but it's not going to be there anymore. So he's not actually going to hit anything. So he's not actually going to do damage. So I'm not going to gain a life off of it. In the same way that, like, Siege Gang Commander is really good at shutting off your opponent's lifelink, too, because you can block with a goblin token and then sacrifice the goblin. And not only do you do 2 damage to something, but they don't get to get another life off of you either, which is not insignificant. So, again, we'll leave that in the baby pile. It definitely has some uses.
Ray, Ray. Oh.
Go on.
Next, Battle Rampart.
I'm going to be honest with you, I don't even remember what Battle Rampart means.
Well, I don't either.
I'm pretty sure it's terrible draft common. It sounds like a wall of some kind. I'm sure. 1/3 defender, tap target creature gains haste until end of turn for 2 and a red. This is, remember a couple shows ago, it might have actually just been the last show that we did, to be honest, when I asked you how many cards you thought might actually be standard playable out of, like, the 100 or the 230 that were
out of
the set. And I told you that it was actually going to be, like, 50 at the absolute most, because they make terrible cards, and you asked me why they make terrible cards, and I said they do it for limited.
Yeah.
That guy right there.
What's terrible about it?
For 3 mana...
Haste is good.
It is, but you're playing a whole guy that doesn't really do very much else for 3 mana. And all it does is give your guy haste, and most of your guys, well, I shouldn't say most, but many of your guys have haste to begin with.
I would say some. I wouldn't say many.
Well, you got Bloodbraid Elf, and you've got Brickland Crasher. Alright, I guess. But it's like if you were playing a deck like the enormous, one enormous guy deck, you know, like my Mythic deck is, or, you know, if you were playing some of those huge Eldrazi, then I could see it. But, like, in most cases, you're going to be, you know, you're going to do something like play the Wolfbriar Elemental, and you make, like, 2 extra wolves, and then, like, you can get one of them haste, but, like, you can't give all of them haste at the same time. And in the meantime, you've just got a 1-3 that can't, like, again, the whole point of your deck is to try to get damage in as fast as you can. And, here's a good way to think about it. Like, if you just played 3 mana for another Leatherback Bailoff, the 4-5 value for 3, same amount of mana, then next turn, you could... Alright, so say you do that on turn 3. Then on turn 4, you play another Leatherback Bailoff. Alright? So in the universe where you played the Battle Rampart, you could tap it and give your new Bailoff haste and you could swing, which is good.
Right.
But instead, if you had just played the first Bailoff first, you would still have a guy that you could swing for 4 with. So the outcome is the same.
I see.
The difference being, if you just get the Bailoff, and if you only get one of the Bailoffs, then he can still swing for 4 next turn. If you only get that guy and not a Bailoff, he just sits there with his dick in his hand and doesn't do anything. The problem is that you're paying 3 mana and a card for a guy that really doesn't do anything without another big guy to enable, and even then it's only enabling it for 1 turn.
Alright. Fine. This one has a dumb name and I don't like it.
Say it.
The Battle Rattle Shaman.
It's a funny name.
It's silly, and it's silly.
This is, again, another card that's really good and limited. Well, I shouldn't say really good. It's solid and limited. I will play this in 75-80% of my red draft decks. Battle Rattle Shaman is a goblin for 3 and a red. He's a 2/2. And at the beginning of your combat phase, you can target creature you control gets +2/+0 till end of turn. like rock. Like, you're in this deck, you can play 3 mana 4/5s and 2 mana 2/3s and 2 mana 2/2s with haste. So, you know, for a 2/2 body, you're paying more than twice what you would normally pay for that body with an upside. And the +2/+0 is just really not worth it. Like, the card, it's not good enough on the efficiency scale. I mean, the fact that it's a card that it grants extra power basically for free, I think shows that you're looking in the right direction. But just in terms of, like, the power level of the card, it's totally not there for Constructed. You follow?
Yeah.
You're making a very bemused face at me.
No, I'm not bemused. I'm just distressed.
This is what I mean. Like, the number of cards that are actually worthwhile is staggeringly low. It's part of the card evaluation skill is figuring out which ones of them are actually worthwhile and which ones aren't.
Well, it's hard.
It is.
This took me a really long time, and now you're just shooting them down.
But it's a learning experience. It is.
The next one has some slashes in it.
It does, because it's 3 different cards.
Right. Because I like them, but I don't know which one is good, and probably none of them is the answer. Is that Umbra?
Yes.
Bear, Boar, and Snake Umbras.
Right. So Bear Umbra is the 2 green-green for the totem armor, +2/+2, and when it attacks, you untap all lands you control. Boar Umbra is 2 and a green for +3/+3, totem armor, nothing else. And Snake Umbra is 1 and a green, or is it 2 and a green? It's 1 and a green?
Pretty sure.
It is for +1/+1, totem armor again, and whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player, draw a card.
Which is the one that was, Chris, you suggested to me, and I thought it was dumb, but you said I should put it on here anyway. Because I know I have it written on my actual paper.
I was trying to explain to her why, I don't know if it'd be good in her deck, and it might be, but Momentous Fall. I was trying to explain to her why that card
okay,
is,
we'll get to it,
why
though.
That card is amazing, and she just wasn't having it.
We'll get to it.
We'll talk about Momentous Fall is actually a ridiculous card.
Whatever, you're just taking his side.
No, he. As soon as that card was spoiled, actually, I'm pretty sure I text messaged and aimed him over and over.
That guy's driving a little Vespa thing. Oh god,
while,
I heard the bat.
Like masturbating furiously. Momentous Fall is amazing.
Did you know that?
I didn't. Of course, now my head's gonna get eaten because you clapped.
No, there's bats out here, by the way, guys. Yeah.
Anyway, Umbras. The thing about the Umbras is, it's not necessarily that they're bad. In fact, cards that make it so...
I'm just going to go in the house.
Cards that make it so you draw a card when you hit an opponent are one of my pet and favorite things to do, which is what the Snake Umbra does. And obviously, your guy not dying...
You're going to be very loud all of a sudden.
Probably. Your guy not dying is obviously a good thing. Which has... Now, the problem that's always inherent in auras is that if your opponent then kills that creature, they get a 2-for-1, which is bad. The auras mitigate, or the totem armors mitigate that to a point, because if they kill it afterwards, they're only getting rid of the totem armor, and your creature sticks around, which is good. The problem is they still have the other drawback to auras, which is if your opponent, there's actually 2 ways, actually 3 when you think about it. If your opponent kills your creature in any way other than something that says destroy or lethal damage, it doesn't save it. So if I play a Gatekeeper of Malakir, which is a 2/2 vampire for black, if you kick it for another black, when it comes into play, target player sacrifices a creature. So if you just have one guy with an Umbra on it, and I kick a Gatekeeper at you, you have to sacrifice a creature, turn one creature, you have to sacrifice it. A sacrifice is not destruction in terms of game rules. So you're going to lose your guy, and you're going to lose the Umbra. By the same token, an Oblivion Ring or a Path to Exile or anything that exiles or removes from game, in old fogey speak, a creature also does not destroy it. So you're not, the Umbra's not going to save it. The creature's going to get removed from the game, and then the aura's going to be in on the board, not chaining anything, and it's going to go, oh shit, and it has to go to the graveyard, so you're going to lose your guy anyway. And the third way is, if you have like your Leatherback Baloth, and you're like, Bear Umbra, and I, in response, kill it with a Doomblade or a Terminate or whatever, it's the same thing, because, you know, the last in, first out rule of the stack. So
Lifo, FIFO.
Lifo and FIFO, exactly. Last in, first out is the way the stack works. if you have a creature and you go, I'm targeting my creature with this enchantment, and I go Doomblade it, which Doomblade is destroy target, not black creature. If neither one of us does anything else, then Doomblade's going to go, it's going to kill your Baeloth. And then your Umbra's going to try to resolve, and the guy that you're trying to play it on isn't there anymore, so it's going to go, oh shit, and it's going to go to the graveyard too. So that's
well,
three
maybe
ways.
Maybe I should be not so scared all the time and just wait there for someone else.
So,
just saying.
Three ways to get blown out on an Umbra, even if you take away the fact that, like, you just play it and then next turn I'm, like, terminated or whatever. At the same time, I don't necessarily know that they're not good. You just have to play being aware of that fact. Like, you don't want to play it into a guy who's playing black or red if they keep that open for your guy. You don't want to play an Umbra into that situation, because then if they go in response, you're screwed.
Right.
That kind
okay.
of stuff. Now, in terms of the effects they actually have, besides the getting killed, or besides the keeping your guy from getting killed, the Bear Umbra is neat. The problem is, since your curve is so low, you're really not going to be able to do much with it, besides, like, you can, like, play the Umbra, and then you can attack, and you get to untap, and you can then, like, play another guy, I suppose, but, like, which again, that's not a terrible thing, but it can lead you to maybe overcommitting, and then getting blown up by Wrath, but it's not awful. I just don't know that you really are going to need that much mana, especially if you've got Garrix to ramp you into the extra kind of stuff you want
to
do.
I just like to have it.
Right, well, and it can turn on mana lands, and, like, well, see, the problem is, like, because, alright, the Bear Umbra is when you attack it triggers, so, since you can't float mana through phases, like, say you had, like, if you wanted to cast your Wolf Prayer Elemental and get, like, four wolves, mm-hmm. it would cost 8 mana.
That'd be great.
But you only have, like, 4. You can't, like, tap 4 and then attack and then tap them and then tap 4 again, because when you move into your combat step, all the mana empties from your mana pool. You can't float mana through steps. So even though you'll have, like, 8 mana over the course of the turn, you only have 4 before you attack and 4 after you attack instead of 8 whenever you want to. But again, I would put that in, like, the maybe kind of pile. The Boar Umber just gives +3/+3. It's a little cheaper. If you had more guys that trampled organically, this might be worth it. Like, if you have a 4/4 trampler, and now he's a 7/7 trampler, that's, like, significantly better. But if your opponent can just chump it, like, a 5/5 and a 10/10, there's almost no difference if your opponent's just going to throw a 1/1
right.
every single turn.
That sucks, though. See, that's one of the things I don't like about this game. That's not fair.
Well, that's why you play guys that have trample. Trample, that's why trample's good. And the Snake Umbra is, again, something that's generally better with trample, because the same thing as the Boar Umbra, you know, you have this guy, and they're like, well, I don't want them to hit me, because obviously I'm good. They're going to draw a card, so I'm just going to throw this one in front of it, or whatever. But again, I would say that's the kind of thing you might want to play and try. So I would throw them in the maiden file, maybe put in, like, one or two of them as, like, a one or two of, just to give it a shot, rather than, like, go on and on or whatever. Those were a long explanation, actually.
I think we're going to get to
I think
your,
a lot of more of these
I don't
are
think
go,
we're going to get to your list anyway.
I think a lot more of these are going to go much more quickly.
One thing I suggested to her was combining an Umbra with something with Death Touch. Because, like, the Snake Umbra thing, something with Death Touch would be an Umbra combo.
How so?
Because they'll want to block, but if they do whatever it is, they'll die.
Oh, well, right. If they block with a big thing, right. It doesn't really help against chumping, but it does help with, like, say, a Wall of Omens or a Wall of Denial or something like that. That's true. The problem is, green does not have a lot of really great death touchy guys. But speaking of green death touchy guys,
my next one?
Yeah.
Daggerback Basilisk.
Daggerback Basilisk is a gray ogre, which is a code name for a 2/2/3, based on the card gray ogre that was just a 2/2/3.
Okay.
But this one is not quite just a gray ogre because he also has death touch.
So that's good, right?
Death Touch is a neat thing. The problem is, as a 2/2 Death Toucher, the problem is your opponent can basically ignore it. Like, the thing that's neat about Death Touch guys is, obviously, they're fine to block. You know, if your opponent's attacking you with an enormous dude, you block with a Death Toucher and it's dead.
And that's good.
That is good. But, for example, there's another spider from, I think it was from M10, but it might have been from Zendikar, I don't remember. It was from M10, actually. He's a 1/3 with Death Touch and Reach. That guy's neat because it can, since it has Reach, you can block guys who have flying, so you can kill guys who fly automatically. Just a and so that's the problem on defense. The problem on offense is, as it's only a 2-2, it's not presenting a really difficult clock for your opponent. Like, taking 2 damage a turn is not ideal, obviously, but if it's, I block with my really good guy, or I take 2 damage, they're usually just going to let it through. And 2 damage a turn is not terrible, but for 3 mana, you can generally get a better deal than that. So I would say that's probably a no-go.
Where the heck was I? Eldrazi Conscription.
And who's the next 2 guys at the same time?
The next 2?
Yep.
A bunch of names.
Come on, just try.
Emrakul?
Very good.
They... I don't know how to say that. Is Aeon. It Aeon or Ion?
Aeon.
Aeon?
Yeah.
I like Ion better. But, all right, the Aeons Torn and Kozilek Butcher of Truth. I'm Butcher of Truth.
These are... Well, 2 of them are actually Enormous Eldrazi. The other one is a card that just turns any random guy into an Enormous Eldrazi. but they suffer from the same problem as the Artisan of Kozilek does, where you
seriously,
want your...
I'm done.
I told you this is going to be a learning experience. You want your opponent to be dead way before you get to that much mana. Way before.
Right, but maybe I will get a lot of trees and I'm unhappy about it and nothing else is coming out. And then I'm like, oh man, I've got all these trees and nothing else, and then I can play this guy.
Even then, getting the 10 is an awful
It
lot.
Happened. Because how many trees did I have that time? Like 8 of them. And nothing else. So...
Well,
it
I'm
would
not,
have been really helpful then.
I'm not going to tell you to not try it as like a one of, but I think that it's just not worth it. Although you can put them into your sideboard to fuck over mill strategies, which is one of my favorite things to do in the world, because all of those big legendary Eldrazi guys, when they hit your graveyard, you shuffle your entire graveyard back into your library, which makes it very hard to get them.
That's hilarious.
Out.
Oh
know,
my
right?
God.
Isn't it? It's
I love
great.
That.
Yes. So I put one. in my sideboard in a lot of decks that actually never actually plan on casting them. It's just to keep you from losing them when you're like in a really long attrition match or whatever. Or if your opponent keeps making you discard things, you can be like, oh, I throw away and move on, and then you get like half your deck back.
That's so funny. That's I funny. Like that a lot.
How much mana does Conscription cost?
Which is still an absurd amount.
Yeah, it is.
And suffers from the same aura problem that your opponent can just be like, oh, terminate. The reason
but at the same
that it
time,
works...
It's kind of like having an East Eldrazi.
It kind of is. If you're going to do anything with a huge mana cost like that, I would totally pick the Conscription.
Flame Slash.
Flame Slash is a card that is getting a lot of talk.
But
by big
it
names.
It actually sucks.
No, actually. Actually. there was a card in Rise of Eldrazi that came out called Wall of Bone, which you probably saw Dustin casting a whole bunch of them earlier. The white guy for 2 mana. It's
I
a 0.
I really watching.
Okay.
You guys remember I was waiting for food to get
Oh,
there.
That's right. You were being all a cop-out in the front yard.
I wanted the food.
Anyway, it's a 0/4 with Defender for 2 mana, which isn't that great. Except when it comes into play, you can draw cards or replaces itself. So it's like you didn't even spend a card to get it. So there's basically no opportunity cost to playing it, which makes it awesome. So you're going to see almost every white mid-range to full-ish deck playing that card. And the problem with your deck is... Most of your guys being 3 and 2 power, gonna have a harder time punching through that. So a lot of mono red and red based aggro decks are talking about boarding in Flame Slash out of the sideboard to deal with 4 toughness guys that it normally has a hard time getting rid of, which because Lightning Bolt won't kill them, including Wall of Omens, Rock's War Monk, who's that 3/4 lifelink guy for 3 mana that I was talking about earlier. That guy it just will wreak havoc on your deck also, but a single Flame Slash will take it out where a Lightning Bolt. Or Malakir Bloodwitch is another one that's a big problem. It can't kill a Baneslayer Angel, but it kills almost anything else that people actually play, and a Lightning Bolt won't kill, but a Flame Slash will. So I think that is definitely a good sideboarding
creature. Hooray, hooray. I'll take it.
Gigantomancer is a neat card.
Hey, I didn't say it.
Oh, sorry.
Gigantomancer.
Gigantomancer is a neat card, and another one that I love for Limited. I opened this guy in a sealed pool once, and he just obliterated everybody I played against. Gigantomancer.
Plus, that's a pretty cool name.
It is also a pretty cool name, and it's got awesome art. Did you see the art on it?
I remember kind of like
like a praying, like an enormous praying mantis, is like hanging upside down behind the guy.
Yes.
Gigantomancer is a. I probably should have mentioned Flame Slash just in case anybody doesn't know what it does. For 1 mana, deal 4 damage to target Gigantomancer is a creature, I believe he's a human shaman. For 7 and a green, you get a 1-1. Not a great deal, generally. But his activated ability for 1 mana target creature you control becomes 7-7 until end of turn. So basically, anything you have will win the game for you pretty instantly. The problem he suffers from is the same as the Eldrazi Inscription. 8 mana is a shitload of mana. And even if you have the 8 mana, you need even more mana to use him on the same turn that he comes down. And in an aggro deck, I don't think it's worth it putting down that sort of mana investment. Next.
Kalni Hydra.
Pretty close. I always say Kalani, but now that I'm actually looking at it, either you spelled it incorrectly, or I've actually been throwing an extra letter in there. I'm not sure which one it is.
You and me have been saying it.
No shit, how about that?
It's not Kalani Gem, it's Kalani Gem.
Kalani Gem. Huh. Okay.
Kalani.
You did hear, but heard, though, instead of Hydra, I have to point out to you.
You know what, I'm going to go edit this when we're done and take... Oh, but then it won't be funny, then people won't understand why I said Awakening Stone.
That's true, we should probably leave it there. That's it.
Retardation. I'm a retard.
Anyway, Kalani Hydra is an 8. I fucking said it. Kalani Hydra is an 8/8 for 8 green mana. I think he also has trample, which normally would be pretty terrible. The thing about him, though, is you can reduce. You pay 1 green less for each green creature you control.
Which I usually have a lot of.
So this guy, even though he also costs 8, you're probably normally not going to have to pay 8 to get him, which is pretty good.
Do my wolves count?
Your wolves count.
See, that's a good deal.
Yep, even though they're not cards, they're still green creatures. Even right. They're just tokens, so they do count.
Wow.
So I think this guy would not be a bad choice as 1 or 2 of. He can be a really powerful finisher if they've got a couple of walls. Or like, even if they have a Bane Slayer Angel that like keeps basically the rest of your guys from attacking unless you have an overrun, like you can pop that guy in a Bane Slayer Angel. We'll save a Bane Slayer anyway. But anyway, regardless, outside of that, I would not play too many of them because, again, they're basically uncastable unless you already have a bunch of guys out, so I would probably max out at 2. The other problem is he can help to overcommit you into a Wrath of God, or Day of Judgment, sorry. So, like, the thing is, if you already have 4 guys out, they're probably pretty close to wrathing anyway. If you just play a 5th guy, they're certainly, especially when it's that big, they're certainly going to wrath.
That's bad.
It is bad. But against decks that don't wrath, he's a lot more powerful. So I would say you might want to try him as 1 or 2 of in the main. If you're playing against a deck that wraths, you might just want to board him out and bring in, you know, other cards that are better for that. But I would try that as 1 or 2 of.
Might of the Masses.
Might of the Masses is one of the giant growth variants for 1 green instant target creature. This is certainly interesting. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I think in most cases a giant growth would just be better, because if you only have 1 or 2 guys, then the giant growth is 1 green for +3/+3. But, you know, same thing, it's just always +3/+3. If you had more tramplers...
I wish I did have
natural tramplers... then it can obviously at times be much better than giant growth, but I think for most situations, if you wanted something like that, I think a giant growth would just be better because, again, like if your opponent chump blocks it, then you know +10/+10/+3/+3 isn't going to matter unless it has trample. If you wanted to try a trick, a couple trick slots, you might want to do like try one of them with 1 giant growth and see how it comes out, and see which one. Whichever one of them worked out better for you, whichever one entirely that way. But I'd say, you know, maybe give it a shot. It's not inherently terrible to say about it.
Oh, it's the card that Chris suggested to me, Momentous Fall.
Momentous Fall is 2 green for an instant as an additional cost. Sacrifice a creature. You draw cards equal to that creature's power, and you gain life equal to its toughness. This card would be okay if it were sorcery. The fact that it's an instant makes it dumb. Because if you talk
dumb
about...
Dumb isn't bad.
No, dumb isn't great.
You have to use descriptive words and meaning.
Use your words.
The way they were meant to be said.
So, if you have... Let's say you play your Kalani Hydra, for example. You got an 8-8 guy, and your opponent goes, holy shit, and he points Terminate at it. You can, in response, tap 4 mana, and play your Momentous Fall, and sacrifice your Kalani Hydra. What don't you understand?
I don't understand how my card will get to go before his does.
Last in, first out. Just like we talked about with the other stuff.
Right, but I don't get it in this situation somehow.
Okay, so you have your 8-8.
Right.
I go Doomblade. Since Momentous Fall is an instant, you can play it in response to other spells.
Okay.
So you play your Momentous Fall.
Alright.
As an additional cost to play the Momentous Fall, you have to sacrifice your Kalani Hydra. Now, the interesting thing about that is additional costs can't be responded to. So he can't play another Doomblade on it in response and kill it before you sacrifice it. So, you sacrifice your Hydra as an additional cost, and now your Momentous Fall's on the stack. Now, he can do something else in response to your Fall, but he can't do anything to your Hydra. Your Hydra's already gone. You already paid the cost of sacrificing it. So now, your spell is the last blade, so it goes first. So the Momentous Fall resolves. You sacrificed an 8-8, so you draw 8 cards and gain 8 life. Normally, that would be fine anyway, but the fact that he already wasted a removal spell, so it was going to die anyway, you basically just, like, 8-for-1 him.
Right.
You're still looking at me with kind of a lost
expression. Yeah, I just don't get it. I don't understand why you get to go first. That seems like a cheat.
Well, it's, but you always, the last spell played is the first one that resolves. Always. For the same reason that if your opponent lightning bolts your guy and you giant growth it in response, giant growth goes off first, it gets too big for the lightning bolt to kill it, then the lightning bolt goes off. And
but I understand what you mean.
But you were just talking about life, like, why is it different than the life-o that we were talking about before?
I don't know. Just
consider it like this. You got two wizards to go back into original portal imagery. You got two wizards and two towers on opposite ends, like a canyon or something. The wizard on the left sees like lightning bolt, and you see the bolt of lightning arcing across the sky at you, and you're like, oh shit, and then you cast giant growth on your dude, so he's too big for lightning bolt to kill. It's basically a similar concept.
Right.
It symbolizes you seeing what they're doing coming and
right.
being able to respond to it.
The way that I kind of see it is like your opponent, like, you can like tell what they're casting, I guess, like by their hand wiggling, and so you know what's going to, you know, keep them from, like, since you get the, since you can see what they're doing first, you can pick what you're going to do.
See, now that makes more sense to me when I picture it as something rather than just cards.
Well, they call it the stack, and it works like a stack. Like, if I play Lightning Bolt, it goes on the bottom. It goes on top. If I then play another card, it goes on top of that one. You stack them up, and then you peel them off one by one, and they resolve as you peel them off. If that helps at all, also.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I don't understand why. But the imagery that you just gave me makes it make more sense. So I'll take it.
Well, that's good. Still,
when do I get to go to lunch?
But even on a creature not as ridiculous as an 8-8, it's still, even if you just, like, use it on one of your 4-4s, drawing 4 cards for 4 mana and 1 card is awesome. Like, that's really, really good, especially at instant speed. They don't print cards that do that anymore. And if you can do it in response to your opponent killing one of your guys, all the better.
So here's my question now. If I had that in my hand, right, would I want to wait for something big, or would I just want to go ahead and do it on anything that you tried to kill?
There's a couple things to consider there. Like, this is where a lot of the tactics of the game starts to come into play. You have to weigh how many cards you're going to get out of it immediately versus what you might be able to. Like, okay, if you say you only have one card left in your hand, it's the Momentous Fall, and you only have like a couple of 3/3s, and I Wrath of God you, in that situation I would say you immediately like the Lamentus fall on one of your 3/3s, even though it's a 3/3, because if you don't, you're not going to get any use out of it for a while. You want to, at that point, use it to fill up your hand so that even though I killed all your guys, you at least have options after that point. But, like, if you, you know, if you've got, like, a couple 2/2s and 3/3s on the board and I'm just going to, like, kill one of your 3/3s, but, you know, like, next turn you're going to be able to, like, play your Kalani Hydra or, like, play your Wolfbriar Elemental or something, and then you'll be able to get much more value out of it, then you should probably hold it until you can get better value out of it. That's one of the, like, this game, once you learn the basics and most of the stuff is completely automatic, a lot of the play skill comes down to, do I use this now? Do I wait on it? Do I play another guy?
That's the hard part.
And hope that I don't get wrathed, or do I hold back these guys and just keep putting pressure on him and force him to pull the trigger so he only kills two of my guys?
Scary.
Right. Well, that's what makes the game hard. That's why nobody has mastered it. That's why even the best players in the world lose a lot. It's really difficult. That's just kind of a judgment call. But yeah, I think, I probably wouldn't play all four of them just because, I mean, you need guys to sacrifice. If you have like three Momentous Falls and no cards in your hand, then you're kind of like, but I could definitely see it as a one or two of.
Naturalize
is obviously the green disenchant for one of the green. You destroy target artifact or enchantment. I would not main deck this just because it's narrow. There are a lot of decks that just don't play artifacts or enchantments, and you're going to be stuck with
but
a dead
some
card.
Do.
Which sucks. But some do, so you can put it in your sideboard, and then after you see that they do have artifacts and enchantments, you're going to bring it in. At the same time, I think we had this discussion before, or maybe we didn't on the podcast. Naturalize is a broad card in that it can deal with both artifacts or enchantments, but it doesn't do anything but deal with artifacts or enchantments. Whereas, I think we talked before about Vithian Renegades. They're the 3/2 for one red-green. When they come into play, destroy an artifact. So they're less broad, but they're more flexible in that if you just need a dude, you can play them instead, but obviously you can't get enchantments with them, you can only get artifacts. But I would say you could definitely put two or three Naturalizes in your sideboard. If only because, like, there are cards that are better than Naturalize. Like, Osali Pride Mage is basically better than Naturalize. He's a 2/2 for one, for a green and a white. And he also has Exalted. And you can also pay one mana and sacrifice him to destroy target artifact or enchantment. That guy does everything. The problem is he takes white mana. You don't have white mana. So, when you are playing a deck without as wide a berth of sideboard answers, sometimes you have to play cards because they're the only ones you really have access to. A Naturalize. Red can't deal with enchantments at all, so Naturalize is basically your only out to that kind of thing. So I would say it definitely is not bad to put two or three in the sideboard against cards that you need to get rid of. A trap you can easily fall into, though, is if your opponent, like, just because your opponent has an enchantment or an artifact doesn't mean you necessarily should pour it in the Naturalize. It has to be something that's messing up your plan.
Something that's
bad enough.
Yeah.
Right. Because you can bring it in, but if it's a card that's not really messing up what you're doing, then you're risking drawing it dead if they don't get that card. Or even if you do use it, it's not, you know, you can dilute your game. Like, if you have to board out three creatures to bring in three Naturalizes against one artifact you saw that really wasn't that big of a deal anyway, you're diluting your game plan and you might not be able to get to it. But, like, there's a card, it's not in a standard anymore, but for example, there's a card called Ensnaring Bridge from a couple sets ago. It's an artifact that costs 3. And while it's in play, creatures with power greater than its controller's number of cards in their hand can't attack. So you would have decks play it that, like, just dump their hand as hard as they can, so then you have no cards in your hand, so no creature with power can attack. Like, against your deck, that would ruin your deck against anybody who just, like, emptied their hand out. So,
yeah.
Like, you would have to be able to deal with that, so then you bring in a Naturalize. Or, like, a Behemoth Sledge can really mess you up bad. It's an equipment that gives +2/+2 in lifelink and trample. So, like, even if they just put that on, like, a 4/4 guy, they're gaining 6 life a turn, which can, like, completely wipe out everything you're doing to them every turn, which means you're never going to get ahead, you're never going to win. But you have to watch out for that trap. You don't just necessarily be like, oh, champ, bring it in. Like, for example, a good example would be Luminarch Ascension is an enchantment. It costs 2 mana, and every turn, at the end of your opponent's turn, if you yourself didn't lose any life that turn, if your opponent didn't do any damage to you or make you lose life, you put a counter on it. When it gets 4 counters on it, you get get to pay 2 mana as many times as you want and make that many 4/4 angels forever. So it's a really powerful card, and you would, your first instinct might be that you would want to bring in a Naturalize to get rid of that, but the thing is, your deck being as aggro as it is, you should be hitting them every, even if it's only for a couple points of damage, you should be hitting them every turn anyway. So they should never get it online. If they ever get to the point where it gets online,
so I'm doing something wrong.
Then something has gone wrong anyway, and you probably weren't going to win regardless. It's, that card is more for like control on control matchups when either player is really trying to beat on the other one until they gain control on the board state, and like in that kind of game, because they're going, you know, 10 turns without them doing any damage to you in that kind of game, and then you just put down hit through angels. But for your deck, it's not really that much of a threat, because if they get it down and it gets active, you're probably losing anyway.
On the subject of enchantments, Mighty Destroyed, we figured out what the enchantment was that angered her, so.
What was it?
Mind Control.
Ah! Yeah, Mind Control is pretty irritating. The thing about it is, though, I don't. Because you aren't going for like a real Protect the Queen strategy, you're going for more of a Swarm strategy, them stealing one of your guys is bothersome, but like it's not. Like if you're playing. Like, if you're playing a deck like Mythic that's, like, all in on, I'm going to play my one huge dude and it's going to kill him in one shot, then Mind Control can be a huge pain in the ass. Because if they steal your Baneslayer Angel, Baneslayer Angel is big enough and powerful enough to just take over the whole game by itself. So if you have it and then all of a sudden you don't and they do, you're in a lot of trouble. But you, like, the worst they can do is, like, steal your Wolfbriar Elemental, which sucks that they took your 4-4, but you should hopefully at least have gotten several two-twos out of it, so, like, they're not going to be, you know, it's not going to be completely game. But it is a irritating card to play against. I know.
It upsets me. I don't like to be upset. I do like to be upset. We all know it's true. Yeah.
Alright, next.
Next is Nest Invader.
Nest Invader is the Grizzly Bear that gives you a free 0/1 Eldrazi. Grizzly Bear, just like, remember I said Grey Ogre is a 3/2/2, a Grizzly Bear is a 2/2/2.
Is that bad?
Usually not. You want them to do something else, otherwise you can just play Grizzly Bears. Or now they're called Claw Bears. They decided they didn't want Grizzly Bears in Magic anymore.
Because it's a real thing.
Exactly. So
gotcha.
Now they're called Claw Bears, even though it's the exact same card. Nest Invader, though, is totally a pretty cool card. You get a 2-2 for 2, which is not awful, especially in a deck like yours that's just trying to, like, beat down with a bunch of guys. It also, at worst, gets you a free Chump Blocker. At best, it ramps you to a 4-mana spell on turn 3. So, like, you could go turn 2 Nest Invader into, like, turn 3 Bloodbraid Elf. The number of games in Standard that are won off of a turn 3 Bloodbraid Elf is high. You've got a lot of good 4. You've got Bloodbraid Elf, you've got Garruk, you've got Nissa, you've got a ton of 4 drops that it would behoove you to play on turn 3. The downside is obviously, just like with the Awakening Zone, it can't get green, it can only get colorless. But your 4 drops all have colorless mana cost on them anyway. Bloodbraid Elf is 2 colorless, Garruk is 2 colorless, Wolfmire is 2 colorless, blah blah blah. So I think that could be a definite big time inclusion. The problem is you'd have to find room in the 2 drop slot or lower, because you don't really want to be cutting your higher cost spells and your 2 drops are already pretty tight. But I mean, I would definitely at least give it a shot. So I would put that in the definite maybe column.
Palakaworm?
Palakaworm is the 7/7 for 7. When it comes into play, gain 7 life. When it leaves, play, draw a card. Really awesome card, actually. But again, it costs 7.
But it can happen.
It can happen. But you really don't. I'm not saying don't put a couple 6, 7, 8 drops in. But you really don't want too many of them. You're not playing a mana ramp deck.
Well, I'm not saying I would put all these big guys in here. I'm just saying out of them, I would probably like to choose one.
Right.
That's all.
Out of the ones that we've already talked about, I say that either that or Kalani Hydra would be the 2 best to go with, because they both trample and are just enormous. So you have to then choose whether you think the Hydra's better because it's going to be a little easier to play, or potentially
a lot easier to play, I think.
Or the Worm has, even though it's one smaller, it's got a much higher upside. The 7 life of drawing card is huge.
Card advantage.
And since I believe it's 4 generic green, mushrooms and stuff, whereas they wouldn't help you with the Hydra because they're not green. To reduce this cost, nor can you sacrifice them for green, they can help you get the more green blade. So that's something you want to balance. You might play a couple games of two of one, and then a couple games of two of the other, and then see which one you think worked out better. But I think it's like a two of the total would be a good one to go.
Pray. Praise Vengeance.
Praise Vengeance. Is that the rebound giant growth, or is that the one where they have to block the creature and draw a card?
I think it's rebound giant growth.
I think it is too. Let's pretend that it's three bound giant growth, because if it's the other one, I'm going to sell it. You don't want it at all. As the rebound giant growth, it's not exactly a giant growth, because it only gets +2/+2 instead of +3/+3, but it rebounds. I would still say if you want something like that, giant growth is just going to be better. Giant growth is a good card. It really is. The rebound, see, the problem is the value of giant growth type spells is that they come as a trick. But with the rebounding, your opponent sees it coming. So, like, you can do a thing where, like, you know, if you have, like, a 4/4 and your opponent's like, well, I'm at 7, so I'll be fine. And they want to, like, keep their guys because they think they don't swing back to the next turn, and they don't block you, and then you go, oh, giant growth. And then you hit them for 7 instead of 4, and then they die. Or, you know, like, they block thinking their guy's going to be safe, and you can be like, hee-hee, and you play it, and now you kill their guy, and your guy's fine. Whatever. The Might of the Masses, because it's rebound, or not Might of the Masses, Praise Vengeance, because it rebounds, you have to play it on your upkeep, they know it's coming, your guys are going to have the +2/+2 before, so they're going to have more information. Mm-hmm. They're going to know what to do, you're not going to be able to trick them into it.
I see. Alright.
So I still say if you're going to play one of them,
what you're just telling me is to put giant growth in.
I don't even know that giant growth is what you would want, but I'm saying if you want to try something like that, try the giant growth instead of one of these funny ones.
My personal favorite, Colossal Might.
That is also an option. Colossal Might is probably better than giant growth, just straight up.
Wow.
We'll talk about that with them.
And he's saying this.
I know, right? Oh my god.
Alright, next on the list.
Rapacious One.
Rapacious One is another card that I love to death and just too expensive.
I like the title of it.
He also has an awesome name, and when you hit somebody for like 8 with it and give like 7 babies, it's sweet. Like, it's almost impossible to lose at that point. But 6 mana for a 5/4 trampler is just way, way more. For one more mana, you could be getting Palaka Worm. You know what I mean? Like, 6 mana is just not what you want to be playing for a 5/6 trampler. I mean, a 5/4 trampler, even. The 5/4 trampler. Spit out for you guys. Just too slow for constructing.
Soul Surge Elemental.
Soul Surge Elemental.
You frowned before I even said it.
I know, it's because I read it. it suffers
sucks.
From the problem that if it's bad by itself. Ideally, you don't want to play any cards that are awful on their own, that you need to play with something else, unless you're playing
like that other one you said earlier.
I mean, his ability to get huge is great, except again, he's going to be a huge guy, but he's not going to have trample. He can chip block forever. He only has one, even though he's got first strike, he's only got one toughness, so like anything that just does one damage directly would hurt him on his face. And like, if you just got wrathed and you're like, I just need a guy, and you draw him, you're going to be like, oh, because now you got a 1/1 for 3 mana.
Yay.
Not so good. So I'm going to say no.
Alright. Traitor's Instinct.
Traitor's Instinct is the threatened variant. I didn't mention what Rapacious One or Soul Surge Elemental is, but if you're listening to this, you probably have access to the internet and therefore can look. If you could, if you don't, you can look. But anyway. Traitor's Instinct is the threatened variant. In this set, it costs 1 more, so it costs 3 in a red. You gain control of target creature until end of turn. It gets +2/+0 until end of turn. Has haste until end of turn, so you can nab one of your opponent's guys and then attack them with it. This is not as good as my favorite one of these, Slave of Bolas, which is the exact same thing, except you then sacrifice at end of turns, so they don't get it back.
Is that one that Dustin was railing against, or Kyle? Someone I thought hated that. The name sounds familiar.
It's probably Kyle, if it's a card that somebody was bitching about a lot.
Oh, there was that one card that Chris played that Dustin said he absolutely refused to play against him if he was using it.
Sun Triplets.
Yeah.
Sun Triplets isn't even good. Good Lightning Bolted. Anyway.
I know.
But, so this is a card that we were talking before about decks that are all in on one guy, like a Baneslayer Angel or like an Eldrazi or whatever. This is a really cool card against those decks, and not a very good card against any other deck.
Sideboard?
Can be a great sideboard card. You know, if you're playing against, like Baneslayer Angel will shut down basically the entirety of your deck until you overrun. But in this case, like, you can beat your opponent down to, like, six. If they drop a Baneslayer Angel, you probably still can't beat them. But if you instead have a Traitor's Instincts, you, like, kill them instantly. I definitely would not play it main. I probably wouldn't even want four in the sideboard. But, like, is it two or three of in the sideboard against decks that just throw, like, ridiculous haymaker dudes? Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely worth looking into. And if you're going to play one of those and you can't play Slave of Bolas because you don't play blue or black, which you unfortunately need to. I think it's black. Because it's Grixis, right? So it's black and then blue, red, hybrid. Yeah. Blue, red, hybrid, right?
No, I think it's black.
No, it's a Grixis card. So black is the Grixis shard. So it would be black and then blue, red. Yeah. So you'd need to play black so you can. So if you can't play Slave of Bolas, I'd say that would be the second best, the next best one you can play. Because it gives you the extra 2 points on the swing.
This one has a dumb name, too. Tuck-Tuck the Explorer.
He's a legendary goblin, and he's actually really neat, because when he dies, you get a 5-5 legendary golem goblin. Really neat card. You're still playing 3 mana for a 1-1 that might turn into a 5-5 at some point.
It could happen.
It could. It could definitely happen, but I really don't think it's worth it. You're paying 3 mana for a 1-1 that might, if you're lucky, turn into a 5-5, you're already playing a 4-5 for 3 by itself. Everything has to be weighed against everything else. Like, you have to... Like, there are certain cards that are so good that if you could play 8 of them, you would play 8 of them. Like Baneslayer Angel, or like Blightning, or Bloodbraid Elf. Most cards aren't that good. So, like... If you really wanted 8 Leatherback Baloths, you could potentially play Tuck-Tuck as, like, a crummy sort of 5th through 8th Leatherback Baloth. But even though they're good, they're not so good that I think you would want to play 8 of them. So, in that case, it's just not efficient enough to take the place of those Baloths or anything else, I don't believe. Vengevine is awesome. The deck that I'm playing right now, and I'm probably playing at the GP this weekend, is Vengevine Naya. I initially thought this card was good, but a bit overrated after playing with it nonstop for the last 4 days. I think this card is beyond insane.
Also a very loud airplane.
Also a very loud airplane. Vengevine can take it down. Vengevine is just that good.
Good enough to take down an airplane.
I would say that irrespective of card availability, I think 4 Vengevine would be an awesome thing to put in your deck. You play enough small-ish guys that it's not absurd that you could just hardcast 2 of them in the same turn anyway. And Bloodbraid Elf is also, since the card you hit off the cascade counts as being cast, a Bloodbraid Elf into any other creature will always rebuy them from your graveyard. Probably should explain what Vengevine for 2 green green, you get a 4-3 haste. If it's in your graveyard, whenever you cast a spell, if it's the second creature spell you cast that turn, return Vengevine from the graveyard to the battlefield. So Bloodbraid Elf into any creature buys it back. If you go Nissa's Chosen, you get it back. Thing to note about it is, though, that it says if you cast the second creature spell of the turn, your deck has several ways to put creatures into play
that don't actually cast.
You
beat me to it.
Exactly. So if you use Garruk to make a beast, that doesn't count. If you use Nissa to go get a Nissa's Chosen to put into play, that does not count. If you play Wolfbriar Elemental and kick it 4 times, the Wolfbriar counts, but the wolves do not, because they're not creature spells that are casting, they're just creatures that are being put into play in other ways.
Gotcha.
That said, again, Bloodbraid into any creature works, and your guys are generally cheap enough that it's not too hard to chain 2 of them together in the same turn.
Yeah.
So I think he would be a very good addition. mine.
Yeah.
The other three I am borrowing from Wonky. So, I mean, just you and I practicing or whatever, we can proxy them.
But I couldn't have it otherwise.
Now that I know how awesome the card is, I'm going to go out of my way to try to acquire the other three that I need as far as I can. And then if I'm not playing that deck, you can obviously borrow mine, but it's just something to keep in mind. I don't think you're necessarily going to be able to have it every time you want to play it in a different order.
Right. Got it.
Okay.
Last one.
Yep.
World at War.
So, World at War is the Relentless Assault not technically a reprint, but the reimagining. This sets Relentless Assault. Wow, this went longer than I thought it did.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be able to get to your outline today.
Pillars!
Hey, listen, just don't give me any homework this time, and we'll just go over the pillars next time and nothing
else.
I didn't
think about it.
Yeah, see? So there you go. My homework will be to think about pillars.
No, I think I did well.
I'm already thinking about them all the time. Thinking about pillars.
So, for World at War, you pay 5 mana, you get an extra attack step, and then it rebounds. These cards, when the first one came out in Visions, when I was 13 years old.
Like 13 years ago? You mean half your life ago?
Yes, exactly. Jesus Christ. Everybody thought it was going to be super awesome, and it was like the chase card of the set for a little while, mm-hmm. and then people realized it really wasn't all that great, and they've tried to remake it several times since, and it's still never really all that great. This one is probably the best one they've ever printed.
But there's a big but coming.
My instinct is that since it's never been good, it's still not good. But there's a little part of me...
Past performance is the best predictor of future performance?
Exactly. But there's a little part of me that thinks that it might actually be insane in your deck where you just have... So, if you wanted to try it, I would not be opposed to it.
I'm glad I have permission.
Well, you can do whatever you want. I'm just telling you what I think. Like, I wouldn't give you shit about it if you wanted to try it. But I would say be prepared for it to be totally not worth it. But on the off chance...
It might be awesome.
It might be awesome, honestly. It really might. So, I think we have... couple things that I would say don't even try. I think we have a couple very fine sideboard cards. I think we have a couple that you might want to give a shot at one or two of and just see how they work out, but I'm not 100% sold on them. And I think in Nest Invader and Vengevine, you got two cards that I think are going to be like basically unrepentantly kick-ass in your deck. Scoot Mob might not be a bad one.
What can you say that slower? More slowly?
Scoot Mob.
Like a mob who is scooting around?
No, like a scoot. S-C-U-T-E is like a little, like a scoot bug. Like a little tiny dude. Like a beetle, basically. Hold on, I have one here. You can look at it.
Then it scoots.
Yeah, it scoots. It's a 1-1 for one, which, not too amazing, but at the beginning of your upkeep, mm-hmm. if you have... 5 or more lands in play, you put 4 +1/+1 counters on him. So he just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger every single turn. Now, you don't want to run a whole lot of these guys because they're worthless until you get to 5 lands. Like a 1-1 for 1 is just like nobody. That's dumb. That's bad. But when you actually get up to 5, he can kick an entirely reasonable amount of ass. So that might also be one. This is not on the list because we were just talking about ROE cards,
right.
but that's something to
or Outcast.
To think about. Dragon Master Outcast is much the same thing, only it has to be 6 lands instead, and instead of putting 4 +1/+1 counters on the guy, you instead put a 5/5 dragon into play every upkeep if you have at least 6 lands. Another really cool card. But the thing... we're totally not going to get to the pillars today.
No, pillars...
But
we'll get there.
One thing that I was thinking about is shifting a little more of the red out of your deck to make room for more green. splash red. The main thing that I wanted to think about was Goblin Guide is a really good card. It's like one, easily one of the best aggro creatures ever printed. Like a 2/2 haste for one mana is just like beyond words. The problem is your deck is already so green leaning that all but two of your lands that make red also make green. And the problem with those is they can't make red on turn one. I believe you only have two mountains that make red on turn one. And a Goblin Guide, as awesome as it is on turn one, it's that much worse on turn two, and it's even worse than that on turn three, and it's even worse than that on turn four. So I think that just with your odds of having both a guide and a land to cast it in your opening hand being so slim, you might want to consider taking out the Goblin Guides. Even though I think they're really neat, I just don't know that they're the best position in your deck. And that would totally give you room for Nest Invaders, for like cutting four Goblin Guides for four Nest Invaders. Because usually you're not playing your Goblin Guide till turn two anyway. At which point your Nest Invader you can also play on 2/2, and it's 2/2, and it not only doesn't have a drawback, but it instead has a plus of ramming you into a 3-drop on 4. So I think that your homework for this week is
to think about pillars.
No. Your homework for this week is to take the things that we talked about both this week and
sounds difficult.
And then we'll play some games. And maybe you're really adventurous. You're FNM with it next Friday.
We'll see.
But for the time being, at least just make the changes and then we'll play some games. Or you two can play some games, whatever.
I liked that night when we came over and played Magic.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. But that's what we'll do. Just get you more comfortable with it. You can see what cards work, what cards don't. You can decide whether any of these cards that we talked about, you want to move forward with them. You know, if you only play one or two and you think they're so awesome, you want to play four. If you only play one or two, shit, and you don't want them anymore, you can cut them entirely, you know, whatever it is. We'll feel it out, do a lot of deck switching around, and try out some different things, and get version 2 of your deck, like, actually up and running.
Okay. That sounds reasonable.
How about that?
Yeah.
So we're over an hour at this point, so we're not going to get to the pillars. I swear to God, people, these days, we will get to the pillars.
They're here on the screen. They're
I've been looking at them for, like, months now.
Yeah, I know. He's always looking at pillars.
So, this is Pursuit of Knowledge number 5. I hope you enjoy listening to us. We love feedback.
We are so happy about all the Twit followers.
We love all you people who are following us on Twitter. We love you people that send us emails and post comments in our thing.
Yes.
I'm trying to follow most of you back as soon as I see you following me on Twitter.
Yes. You
know. So keep that up. Keep letting us know what you think. If you think we're terrible, if you think we're great, if you think there's something we should discuss, if you have a suggestion for Kira's deck, if you think dogs are great, whatever.
We want to hear about it.
We do. We do want to hear about it.
Even if your comments are about our stuff that we were talking about that has nothing to do with magic. I mean, that's cool, too.
I bullshit about nonsense all the time.
Yeah, it's totally true.
Keep in contact. Let us know. My aim is Butt Ailments. My Twitter is Procrastinarian. My website is buttailments.com. My moto name is Space Marine Killa.